What's going on, everybody? Pat DeBear here, and we are back again. It is another pop culture roundup with the boys of Flame On. I am being joined on this episode on the East Coast by BJ.
Hey, what's up?
And Eric.
Hello.
And in the Central Time Zone on travel, we've got Brian.
Greetings from Uptown. Is that right? Uptown Chicago?
That is where we are at.
So, you're an uptown girl?
Uptown squirrel, if you will. I do sing that to myself every so often when I'm thinking about where I am here in Chicago. But Brian is on travel and here in the palatial uptown estate here in Chicago. So we are going to chat about the month in pop culture as we end the month of May and get ready for our Wrath Month, Pride Month, whatever you want to call it, however you want to celebrate it, including a happy Pride Wrath Month to the lesbian U-Haul toy from Target's Pride collection.
Was it Gal and Pal?
Wow.
What are their names?
I don't know.
It's like something in Pal, and it comes with a U-Haul. It's amazing.
With the lesbian colors as the stripes on the side of the U-Haul.
So I saw a shirt on the internet that popped up, and it was just like, I swing both ways violently with an axe, and it had the bi. And I'm getting that for a friend of mine. I'm 100% getting that for her. She need absolutely, because she's a D&D nerd, and I mean, she's bi, so it's perfect.
For a second, I thought you were going to say that was in the Target Pride collection this year. And I was going to say, honestly, maybe I need to buy that from Target.
Only online, because they're not putting anything real in the stores. It's just on the stuff that's more blatantly Pride-centric is online. Online. In the store, I think what they say, mostly you'll just get authentic in rainbow letters. It's kind of disappointing. And the lesbian birds, too, of course.
Yeah, but I saw an Instagram reel or probably TikTok. And sorry, it shows the age where you see certain things. Like, I still see most of these things originally on TikTok. I'm not that old yet. At least I was going to say not in my heart, but in my heart I'm like 90, so that's not the case. But I was sent a video of a lesbian talking about the moving birds. And she was just like, how dare you so accurately represent my life? Because the one bird on top has a denim vest on with a little like page boy, paper boy hat. And she's like, that is my girlfriend making sure everything goes well in our move. And then the other bird that's inside of the U-Haul has like the shirt that's tied up at the center. It's ridiculous. But oddly accurate at the same time. To Target said, you know what, faggot, here you go, this is what represents you. And oddly on point.
I hired a lesbian temp worker.
some ChatGPT lesbian snuck through there.
You know, it happens. I have not been to Target in quite some time. I have not purchased anything from Target in quite some time. But yeah, here is that's the lesbian moving truck from Target. I know we've discussed this many a times. The podcasting, a visual medium in its grandest form. But yeah, good times. It is available at the Target right down the street from my house, though, if I wanted to go buy a Pride Featherly Friend Collectible Bird Accessory Moving Truck for only $12.
Oh.
You get the moving truck and two figurines. Not a bad price.
I mean, it's a shame that, you know, their customer base is being like, oh, that's adorable. And then going about their way. I mean, it's a shame the consequences of their CEO's actions have come to roost. So, unlike the lesbians in that toy set. So yeah. It's a shame. Absolute shame. Maybe they should, you know, course correct a little bit, but
I'm, you know, suffering the consequences of my actions? Who would have thought?
I mean, once he loses his third or fourth yacht, you know, and gets tariffed within an inch of his life, I'm sure he'll have a change of tune. However, at that point, I feel like we're all just going to be piling it. Whatever aliens come to pick us up, they're going to be begging for us to come back to Earth. But I'm not. I don't care if they come out of that ship with a book that says to serve man. I will still get on it. I will absolutely still get on it. And for those of you Simpsons, that don't get the reference, yeah, that's a cookbook.
I was going to say, The Simpsons taught us well. Like, we know that. And we know why you're like, you know what? Sure. I'll rub rosemary all over my skin just to get myself ready for you.
I'll tell you what I told the racist guy down the street. Gobble it up. Salt it and gobble it. I don't give a fuck. Eat me.
I don't know how to respond to that.
I'm guessing he didn't either.
No, he died. There was a really racist dude like a couple apartments down, like a buildings down from me, and he 100% died. And I was,
well,
like,
BJ, you're already so salty, you probably killed him with a heart attack.
Oh, he wouldn't taste this. I mean, not exactly like anybody's lying up. Gobble me, swallow
me, drip down the side of me.
then that's definitely too ethnic for him. That's too much. So
he was like, "Oh no, ethnic music! I don't know what to do with myself." But speaking of the tariffs, apparently most of them have now been blocked by one of the lower courts. So
I think an appeals court is allowing them to continue, like during the appeal process, but the appeal process
is probably not obeying the Supreme Court. So what does it matter if a court does anything? Right. Congress isn't going to tell them no. So,
right. Orange Daddy, they don't want to upset him.
Has anyone actually seen anything that they wanted to buy and how much more it's going to be or is now? I haven't seen it directly, but I've been talking to friends who do a lot of like manufacturing of like small goods, and they're already seeing like a 30 to 40% hit.
Yeah, I've seen it. I saw it first on, so Amazon has this thing that's essentially Temu. It's just run by Amazon. And it was really hilarious because the first week where the tariffs were supposed to be super high and then he changed his mind, I literally logged onto it to look at this because all that stuff, it's called an Amazon haul and it's a completely different page. But it something that was like $8 or like $5 was like $16 one day, and then it dropped back down to like $5. And then a week later, it was 20. And then like 4 days later after that, it was like $6. So I've seen it there. And I know Walmart is no longer playing ball. And they are like, no, we're going to raise your prices. Like, we know we told him we would eat the cost, but we're not going to eat the cost. So it's one of those things where eventually either A, some places are going to preemptively raise their prices for like 6 months or something just to get ahead of it if and when it stops doing up and down. But it's one of those things where you'll start to feel it's gonna come on like hard and fast.
So we were looking at the new Switch 2 has a different SD card format, and you couldn't even find the ones that's called Express or something. You couldn't even find them on Amazon, but when you found them on other sites, they were like so expensive. And I don't know if that's always been the cost, but they're definitely harder to find if they don't have them on Amazon.
Well, they're
don't
new.
Get me that motherfucking Nintendo Switch 2, I swear to.
Well, the Express cards are, that's a new format and they're limited. But yeah, I mean, the pricing definitely was more expensive for the few options you had on Amazon. But Did anybody snag a Switch 2 in pre-order?
I had the chance and I backed off of it mostly because I think I'm going to give it probably a year or 6 months or a year after it comes out. Mostly because they really did fucking piss me off a little bit on the whole, like, the way the games are just a key code. The game isn't actually on the card, which means you better get a high capacity SD card, because it's going to fill up really fucking quick. I think some of the third party games are on the cartridge and you're not downloading the full game. But
I think it's reversed. Really... I think the original games for Nintendo are on the cartridge. The third party games are the ones that are doing the key card.
No, I know. No, Mario World is not. It's not on the cartridge. At least Mario.
We'll have to check our sources there. Yeah, we'll double check that. What you're saying makes sense from Nintendo being horrible about that. But I thought when I read, because I was the same way, I was like, "Are you kidding me?" And then I was like, "Oh, okay, it's these third party games. I don't care." I did snag one. We may have talked about this. I went down to a GameStop like right when getting ready to open, like an hour before they opened. And I was like one of only like 30 people in line, and they had like 60 pre-orders. So next week I actually go down to the store, back to the store to get it. I'm hearing a lot of places will probably have additional stock. If you really want to do it, you could show up at midnight and try. But
well, a friend he got one from GameStop, and he sent me his link from Nintendo. So I think I've got like one day left, or like I've got like there's like a couple days left on the link where I could purchase one directly from Nintendo. But like I said, it's just I'm going to see how it goes in like the first 6 months to a year, because just the way this like they released the Switch OLED, I think, what was that, like 2 or 3 years after they released the regular Switch? And then they released a newer updated version of the Switch with a better battery, like. So I'll give it about half a year, because they're at least releasing Pokemon, Legends ZA, AZ on the Switch 1, also on the Switch 2. So I'm like, okay, I can at least get that version and play it, and we'll see. I mean, I like the system looks great. I'm also really annoyed that they did. They have a version of it that's like $150 cheaper in Japan that just doesn't have any of the language software. It's only in Japanese. And that way, if people are traveling overseas, if they get that version, they can't, unless you know Japanese, you can't really play it. So I was like, that feels a little needlessly... feels like a little bit of a cash grab. So, I mean, I think Nintendo's had a history though of like every couple of generations or something, there's like one system that is quite literally just like a cash grab. And I think the last one was like the Wii U, which is very much the prototype to the Switch. And they had a couple of like Wii U only games, not a lot, and that was like the shortest version of the Wii. Like, I think it was out for like maybe 2 or 3 years. And then they released the Switch. So it was like, it was very weird. Like the concept was great, but at the same time I was like, yeah. So
it was 5 years between Wii U and Switch.
Okay. So, and then the Wii was geared more towards casual players than it was towards like actual gamers. So there's something they always do that kind of irritates a group of people. You know, this year it's just the people that, you know, don't have a ton of money. I'm like, you know, especially with the increase of the game cost, I was like, that feels kind of needless. But I mean, they've been increasing game costs since, I want to say, the PS5. Like the games are like $70.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's just been across the board. Two things: one, the time frame has been pretty consistent for Nintendo, 5 to 6 years, 2001 to 2006 to 2012 to 2017 for GameCube to Wii U to Switch. And Brian was right. The Nintendo has said that their first party games will not be game key cards. They are going to be full game cartridges.
Okay, so it's flipped.
Yeah, yeah. Which I thought I had read. I looked it up. I wanted to make sure just because that was such a huge thing when they started, like after the Nintendo Switch 2 Direct and all of that had come out. But Mario Kart World, Age of Imprisonment, like those things will be physical game cards. But the third-party producers are probably more likely to be game key cards, which at that point, why even sell them? Like, why sell a why waste the plastic? Like, it just feels like stupid. It's literally like going, it's like when you go to Target or Walmart, or I was gonna say Toys R Us, but goddamn, I'm aging myself there. Although they are back, they are back. We have one in the mall in like in the northern burbs up here. But I remember back in the day when I would go to Toys R Us and they had that whole section of games. And but it's like when you go and you buy the like gift card and you scratch off the code and you go to the, you know, Nintendo online shop, put in your code and that's it. Like that's what it just feels like, except you have something you have to keep around with you more often. Like it's just weird.
It's weird to even make the physical case for it because it's not like there's an instruction booklet inside. They don't make instruction booklets anymore. So
Yeah,
it's well, what it's giving, we're going to see how this works out, and if enough people are on board, then we can finally do away with the whole trading your game industry. That's what it kind of feels like. It's somebody somewhere was like, let's test this out and see if we can finally get people to stop trading in games or selling games at the mom and pop game shops. GameStop has actually been really weird with they've actually been good with their pricing. A friend of mine went by there to trade in like a game that's no longer in print, and they offered him like $80 and he paid $50 for it. And GameStop has also started taking older games again. They've started, they've gotten more into card games and they've gotten more into buying and selling retro video games again. So there's been some sort of shift with them. I don't know if they got a new CEO or something, but I have noticed if you've got a game that's in limited print and you go to GameStop, they'll actually, like, I think I traded in an old DS game that was in limited print and they gave me almost the full value back for it. And they were shocked. The guy scanned it and was like, $70? He was like, $70? And I was like, what? For what? Well, I'm not buying anything. And he's just like, no, for your game. That's what we're offering you for the trading credit. And then if you get like one of these special items, it's double the credit. It's $140. And I was like, yeah, everybody in the store was like, what? And it was a Persona Q. So it was like, it was one of those DS games that like they printed out a certain number and then they never printed like any more. So I was like,
But if you went back in there to buy that game back, it's probably $140 on the shelf.
And that's what the mom and pop places do. That's exactly what the mom and pop places do. Which is, if you're gonna give me almost the full value back, then sure, you get to sell it for whatever you want. So if you're gonna give me $70-$80 back for a game, and then turn around and sell it, because I think the original copy of Mario RPG and the Seven Stars or something like that. That is like $150, like the cartridge, even though they re-released it for the Switch. But a lot of interesting stuff is happening with retro video games and buying and selling them. So I'm not surprised at all about the key cart thing, because Nintendo games have always been some form of cartridge, except for, was it the Wii and the
Well, GameCube's was the switch over from cartridge to disc.
Yeah.
Because you had GameCube, then it went to the Wii U, and then it came back with the Switch.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, no, that's, I mean, come on. We're the generation that grew up with having to blow into a cartridge. damaging it yet making it work all at the same time.
Which wasn't the problem. I love that I literally sat down and watched like an hour long YouTube video of why that worked, and somebody was like, it didn't actually work. And I was like,
no we did more damage to the game because we were getting moisture onto circuitry. Yeah, I ended up getting a replacement part for my Nintendo, opening up the whole thing, and it was, you know, essentially the piece that the cartridge slid into that needed to be replaced, and then it worked fine. But yeah, it'll be interesting. I did not try for the pre-order. My thought process is, let me just wait till it comes out. If there was a good Zelda game that was coming out, a new Zelda game that was coming out, I probably would have been a little bit more like, I want to play this. So I'm just kind of going to wait and just see if Best Buy gets in some new units and do a paid over time, you know, no interest for 12 months promo on the card or something like that. And then get my pro controller. Cause I'd be damned if I use a Joy-Con to play any games.
Donkey Kong Bonanza almost got me. I'm not going to lie. I saw Donkey Kong Bonanza and I was like, ooh, that really, it's been a while since I've played a really good Donkey Kong game, and I'm really, it looks really fun and really good, so like that might get me.
I will say one thing that is, I found very interesting about the new things for the Switch was like the lending, the being able to lend games mm-hmm. between consoles for, I think it was like a week or 2 weeks. I think it's 2 weeks, and then it automatically reverts back if you haven't sent it back to the owner of the game. Like, I think that's kind of a cool idea, especially when you have, you know, a family or a couple of kids that have Switches, and you don't necessarily want to buy 2, 3, or 4 copies of a game, so that way they can all play it at different times.
So Steam has a system like that. Like, you can do that with the Steam account. You can like label it, and I think the only thing is something's weird with the saves. Like, you, when you save it, if you end however you link your library to the other person, to the other account, if you don't save it, like if you revoke their access, their saves aren't deleted, but they're locked. So even if they buy the game later on, so you have to, it's very much, you have to really trust the other person isn't going to fuck with you as far as Steam goes. And I know PlayStation has a somewhat similar thing. I just can't. It's very complicated. And I can't remember how it works. I think that your main profile has to be on my PlayStation. And the thing is, you can sign into your PlayStation with a guest account, but your main profile will always be on my system. So it's very weird, and you can only play the games that I have a digital copy of. So you can play my digital library, you can't. But if I leave a game in the system, you can't play that. So a lot of modern systems kind of all have a similar thing, but Nintendo just seems to have streamlined it and made it simpler for everybody.
Interesting. All right. Yeah, and I think you have to be on like the Nintendo family plan or something like that. There's restrictions to it. It's not like I could be like, all right, BJ, you got a Switch 2 here, I'm gonna lend you this game for 2 weeks if we're not on the same family plan or whatever. But thought it was kind of cool, and for somebody who doesn't really do a lot of Steam gameplay, or you know, I think I play like 2 games on my PS5, one of which is WWE 2K24. What? I got back into wrestling. Leave me alone.
Oh, my God. I don't even know that until I look at his YouTube stuff, and I'm like, oh, my God, it's a lot of wrestling content.
That's how I got into it. He has trauma from being left at a wrestler dinner thing as a kid.
It was American Gladiators. It wasn't wrestling.
That's right.
I mean,
close enough.
Random adults in tight suits.
I will say,
catchphrases.
Seeing any of this content now just reminds me how much drag and wrestling have in common, and not like that. Like, it doesn't sound obvious, but then you think about it and you're like, oh my God, it is so much like identical, you know, with the costumes and the makeup and the show and all of it. Yeah. Anyway, it is interesting to revisit that a little bit.
Go look up Seth Rollins look up Seth Rollins' WrestleMania entrance. That is just pure fucking drag. That man, straight man, but just full out fucking, he's got some of the gaudiest, most drag, not even, well, I mean, his ring attire is whatever, but like his entrance attire is insane.
I mean, back in the day, like Gold Dust was definitely a drag them. I wouldn't say
drag them.
Drag them. I mean, and the way the even like Ric Flair's feathered robes were that he would come out in.
Yeah, his daughter keeps up that tradition. She comes out in the big robes with the plumes and all of that. But no, for sure. I love that you mentioned Gold Dust, Eric. That's you know what's funny? Still wrestles.
Really?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Not as Gold Dust anymore, but kind of with that same, like, still does like half face paint.
Oh.
He wrestles under his real name, Dustin Rhodes.
Dusty Rhodes, yeah.
Dustin. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, yeah, his dad was Dusty Rhodes, yeah.
Yeah, and his brother is now like the face of the WWE and Cody, but yeah, no, it absolutely is. But I watch Simon Miller's YouTube videos and give me a muscular, bald-headed man who talks about big men slapping man meat. I watch, and then I got back into it. And then I would watch a PLE, they're no longer pay-per-views, PLE once in a blue moon. And now that Raw's on Netflix, I can actually watch, you know, some of the weekly television. It happens. I'm not an AEW person, but they're basically holding residency at the Aragon for the month of July. They're going to be there for like six shows. But anywho, it's enough about me. But WWE or the 2K games are coming to Switch because of the updated processing. But anywho, let's go to another topic and get off of me watching wrestling again. And let's go to the Star Wars universe. Brian, I think you watched a show that I've heard lots of great things about, but I have not watched. So why don't you tell us about it?
Did anyone else besides me watch Andor season 2?
I can't. It's like watching The Handmaid's Tale. Like, I watched the first season and it was great, but I'm like, I'm living this right now. I can't do this.
Yeah, it's very much like that. I can watch it, and like Handmaid's Tale, I can't watch either because I'm like, no, that's too close to reality. The Star Wars version of it separates it enough that it, like, I can handle it, but it also really is triggering in good and bad ways, and in ways where I'm like, oh, Empire and horrible and this and that. And then you're like, oh, you know, I could be a revolutionary. I could do some of this. Not that I would. Course, for the public record, I'm not suggesting that I am a revolutionary. However, watching Andor, you could learn a lot.
Burn it down.
It's for those who are not familiar, this is the two season sort of prologue to Rogue One. So characters that show up in Rogue One have had a life and lots of activity up till that point. And it really shows the rebellion going from a scatter, disconnected sort of like just little fires out there in the universe, and then how sort of the different people connect all the dots and build the networks and then become the force that you see in Yavin in A New Hope and in Rogue One. So it really does a beautiful job just connecting everything, but in a devastating way this season. Because you get just three episode little vignettes per year leading up to Yavin, to the battle before Yavin. They'll say BBY. And I always was like, wait, BY? It's before before battle of... Anyway, so it's confusing. But anyway, yeah, it shows most of it. Not all of it. This season, they actually take a little couple of sidetracks. But most of it from Cassian Andor, who is played by Diego Luna, fantastically. Like, I loved him already. Y Tu Mama Tambien is one of my favorite movies, and I really was thrilled to see him in Rogue One and just be reminded of how good he is. But then, like, these two seasons have just blown my mind. But you mostly follow him, but you follow, like, Mon Mothma, everyone who remembers many Bothans died to get the plans for the second Death Star. People always think it was the first one, but it's the second one. You see a lot of other characters that are really small. You do get to see, I'll spoil a little bit, it's the robot in Rogue One, K2.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
E260, I think. Alan Tudyk.
I love K2.
You see where he comes from. You see how he kind of joins the rebellion. And it's in a terrible moment of the show. Like kind of the Gaza invasion, if you will, of the Star Wars universe in a little bit of a way. Which, by the way, like, this was written like a year or two ago, but it's very, like, relevant to Gaza. It's very relevant to any period of time where you have one major sort of empire or colonizing force really being horrible to their neighbors, so to speak. Or
you want to know a really fucked up fact? The exact same thing has happened over the past year in the series One Piece. I have witnessed two genocides. I'm currently witnessing one genocide, and a second genocide has happened in One Piece.
That's really heavy. I thought One Piece was a comedy.
It is, but when I tell you... It contains
multitudes.
That series contains multitudes, but no, a secret controlling force of the government tests a weapon on an island, not because the island has ousted its rulers, but because the island just happens to be close.
Are you current on One Piece, by the way?
I am, yeah.
Okay. Manga, yeah. Or just...
Yes. Okay. All of it.
And the government used to have, quote-unquote, hunting parties on islands where they would go around and just treat the people living there as the prey, and people scored points based on how many civilians they could kill.
My God.
A rabbit hunt. Yeah. So when I tell you, and this is the colonizing people of One Piece, the highest body.
Are they the bad guys?
Oh, they're the worst guys.
Okay. At least they're just making sure.
They're the 1%.
Listen, yeah. Japan has done some colonization, if you did not know your history. And so I'm not saying that in this day and age that they would do that and make a series like that, but, you know.
But, yeah, so like, what you're saying with Andor is, like the fact that Oda, the creator of One Piece, was just like, oh, no, these are colonizers. These are absolutely, like, the richest, worst people you'll ever meet in your entire existence. Like, and they have a secret ruler who is just as terrible. So, like, if not worse. So, like, yeah, no.
Yeah.
The
best part of Palpatine, though, or Palpatine, oh my God, the best part of Andor is you don't see Palpatine at all. You don't see Jedi. You see stormtroopers, like, in a couple spots. You see a couple Star Wars-y, like, ships and things. But so much of it is just down in the weeds, in cities, in worlds. They built this whole world called Gorman. It's basically sort of revolutionary France from, like, World War II-ish or actually probably prior to that. And just, like, seeing this culture just be completely subjugated and then decimated because they're strip mining the planet for whatever calcite they need it for the Death Star. Like, so much of everything drives the Death Star. But you get to see from the inside of the Empire, you get to see, like, bureaucrats within the ISB, which is like the spy agency. You get to see this other guy, Cyril, who's kind of the antagonist to Andor, kind of. And he's, like, placed high up in this little administrative thing as, like, a double agent. And just seeing that they, from their perspective, you know, what they're doing is not bad until I think something, like, turns and they realize what's happening and they see what is effectively going to be genocide and start to have a reaction. So, I mean, it's not just showing us, like, the hero's side, the revolutionary side. It's really showing, like, a little bit of, like, what these... Because empires and fascism destroys everything. It doesn't just destroy people who it's obviously targeting. It destroys the people in the fascist state, too, whether morally or physically. I mean, just across the board, it's just so horrible. And the writer of the show, Tony Gilroy, who did like Bourne Identity and he did Summer Rogue One and has done some other stuff that's really good. He's really passionate about saying, like, I pitched Star Wars on this idea and nothing really, like, he barely ever was told no. Disney was just like, yep, we love it, go do it. And it's like one of their biggest hits. Like, it's bigger than a lot of the other Star Wars properties that they've done, because it's just good television. It's just really good. So even if you're not a Star Wars fan, it's honestly something you could pick up and just enjoy. And then you'll hear the Star Wars-y stuff and you can go look it up if you want. But two episodes or two seasons now are out. If you, just for nothing else, look up the Mon Mothma wedding dance number, because it's a club banger now that people are using in all kinds of amazing contexts on, you know, TikTok or Instagram. It's just great. It's a great show. I highly recommend it. Probably one of the best shows I've seen in years. So, yeah.
Andor. I didn't know how to segue out of that one.
I know, there's nothing good to do. After talking about fascism and genocide, what are you going to do?
Right? Like,
this is, you know, this is how I felt about American Horror Story Cult when it started airing right after the 2016 election. It was like, there's so many of these pieces of art that I'm just like, it's a lot to try to take in and live in the world that created, like, that we're actually living in. Yeah, but I've heard nothing but good things about Andor, but I don't know if it's necessarily for me. But if you've watched it, feel free to share your thoughts and let us know what you thought about it. So on to art that is in no way, shape, or form ever political. Let's talk a little bit about Drag Race All Stars season 10.
Talk about fascism. I mean, what?
RuPaul. If the liberals had their way, we'd all be transgenders.
No, that's Carrie Colby you're thinking about. If Carrie Colby had her way. So, BJ and Eric were not on our Daredevil episode, but since Joel was on, we decided to talk a little bit about Drag Race. But I know that not everybody listens to episodes that they, about topics that they don't maybe, you know, watch or aren't their thing. So let's dive a little bit into All Stars Season 10, the Tournament of All Stars. And, you know, we're recording this right before episode 2 of the second bracket happens. So episode 5 of the season overall. But this season sees 18, you heard that right, 18 different RuPaul's Drag Race contestants from season 2 all the way up to the most recent season 17, with Lydia Butthole Collins making a 3-day turnaround to return to the workroom after their season finished. And we see these queens compete in 3 brackets, 6 queens in each of the brackets. The top three from each of those brackets will then go on to compete in 2 more episodes for points and then have a Lollapalooza smackdown with a wild card contestant, which we found out about at the end of the first bracket or the first 3 episodes.
Oh, that's the one they bring back whoever, whatever, that thing.
Each judge will pick one of the non-advancing queens from the 3 brackets, who will then be put into a hat and chosen at random. One will join the queens competing for the lip sync smackdown for the crown.
So complicated.
Bruno will pick their ball out of a hopper.
Bruno will shuffle his balls around.
Whoever
his dick points at is who gets in.
Rue will sneeze into a napkin and read the bogeys to see which of the stars will choose her star.
All right, BJ, I'm not kink shaming. I'm just kink asking why.
Listen, everybody. So when you watch the Hunger Games, I've watched The Hunger Games a couple times. You do realize we're District 1, right? Like, our society is District 1, and we're going to be doing weird shit like that. And probably, I used to think it was 20, 30 years from now. I think 5 years from now, we're going to be doing weird shit like that.
Well, when AI basically takes all our jobs, what else are we going to do with our free time?
We just eat until, and then we're given Ipecac to throw up and eat some more, so...
Again, not kink shaming, kink asking why.
Kink curious, even.
Oh, no, not kink curious.
Hey!
Over there, kink curious.
Frolicon was just 2 weeks ago, so like...
Oh, no, not Frolicon again. Did you go?
I went to a couple of room parties. I didn't have the money to go to, like...
Do you remember how long since you went and reported back for us?
Oh, it was a while. It was like five years? 5 or 6 years?
More than that. Yeah, way more than that.
I've been in Chicago for 5 years.
Oh, okay. So yeah, then it was probably like all close to 9 or 10 then.
What's the weirdest thing you saw? No, I don't want to say weird. What's the most interesting thing you saw this year at the parties, if you want?
Oh, this year. So there was another American Horror Story themed party. So the same, I'm 90% sure it was the same person that was dressed as the addiction monster with the drildo. That wasn't the weirdest thing. I think the weirdest thing was there was like not like a paintball game, but there was like apparently down in the con space, there was like a paintball game, but it was like people were naked. So
I was about to say, if you're not going to end with they're naked, what the hell? But naked paintball sounds horrifying.
Oh, no. Like, and clearly those people had to be into impact play. So like, if you like the sting, a paintball's the perfect thing. Oh, that rhymes. So I think
you should do that marketing next year.
I don't think it's so funny because I went so many times that like honestly it went from like me being like, wow, this is not what I expected, to me being like, oh, that's somebody dressed as Princess Peach. Oh, that's nude paint. So like the nude cosplay with the nude paint is something like now I'm like, if I don't see it, I'm disappointed. Because there was like an Evangelion one. There's a DIY burlesque show that you have to sign up for before you go to the convention, and you have to like submit a song, and they actually have like a practice, like they have a run through, they have like 2 or 3 run throughs before they actually like have the show that night. So like, yeah. I think the wildest thing I ever saw was the bat dance, and that was the year Prince passed away. That was my first time going. Prince had passed away, and they had a party based on the music video for the song Bat Dance. And for those of you listening, that was Prince's song for the first Batman movie. And
Hold on. That was his soundtrack. He did the entire soundtrack for
Did he do the entire Batman soundtrack? Jesus.
Yes. Yeah. That is a Prince album.
And technically not the first Batman movie, the first Michael Keaton Batman movie.
The first Michael Keaton Batman movie. The first one I saw. The first Michael Keaton Batman movie. And you could enter the party two ways. You could just walk through the main entrance, or they would restart the music video. And during the part where all the girls are lined up and the Joker is like crawling through between their legs, you can enter the party that way. So that, and then Pat You'll Love is the same suite the next year had a WrestleMania party where you could submit your own entrance song and name, and you could have your own entrance.
As one does. I mean,
so
yeah.
the pageantry at Frolicon honestly was next fucking level.
Listen, that's all these things are. Because that was 2 weeks ago. IML was this past weekend, and as any leather being will hate me for saying it, the IML contests are just pageants in leather. Mm-hmm. Or yeah. not a lot of leather, because, I mean, you know, some of those.
Them things be thangin'.
You know.
It's yeah. all drag. That's what we're saying. It's all drag. You're born naked, and the rest is drag.
Pretty much. Someone should write a song like that.
So, Drag Race. Are we all caught up? Did everybody watch?
Race?
Little black people. Black people. You have to race. Race.
Race.
Talk about District One. Jesus.
I swear. I was so Amazing Race. My roommate Chris and I, like, that's one of the reality shows I get him to watch, like, that he actually enjoys watching. And every time somebody gets into a cab in any country and they're like, gotta go fast, I'm in a race, I'm like, if I did this, I would want the person driving the cab to turn around and go, race! And then I would feel complete. I'd be like, my people, let's go. And just be happy about that. Anyway, listeners, if you don't know what we're quoting, you need to look up Bob the Drag Queen, Peppermint, and Fall Guys. I don't know if that's exactly how you'd find it on YouTube, but I know that there's, like, the YouTube clips of it. But it's Jacob trying to explain to Bob, Peppermint, and Mateo Lane about Fall Guys. And it's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And it was during the pandemic when they were doing a lot of their online streams and fundraising. So good. But yeah, Eric, what are your thoughts on, let's say, the cast in general? And then what we've seen so far with Bracket 1, which is completed, and this first episode of Bracket 2.
I'm overall liking it. Definitely a great step up from All-Stars 9. I wasn't sure I would like the format. I'm like, man, this is getting way too complicated with everything. But I do enjoy the fact that it's just focused on six people at a time. That's very helpful. And that way queens aren't getting lost in the shuffle.
Aren't they?
Well, I mean, at least the judges talk to all the girls.
Well, that's true. Even if they're just shitting on the older queens. Yeah. At least they're getting some time.
And Phoenix is there. I thought the first bracket was good. I thought the right three queens moved on.
Same.
It was going in, those were the three I was like, those are the ones I would like to move on, and they moved on. And I figured Irene would come back and do, for sure, she can't do worse. For sure she was going to do better. Just because even during her season, when she was posting the looks she didn't get to wear on her social media, I was like, there's a lot more to her than what we got to see. So I wasn't surprised that she came back and did better.
The Irene that you saw in bracket one is the Irene that Seattle's been seeing forever, which was why I think her season during regular Drag Race was so shocking, because that's like did not well represent her. But I love the fact, I'm very happy to see Seattle showing so strongly in bracket one. I was a little surprised they put both of the Seattle queens together. But I mean, they're just, Bosco and Irene are just killing it. I kind of wanted, not that she would have been, although what's her name? Lydia was on. It would have been interesting to see Arietti on this season, especially in light of the insanity that has sprung out of her and Irene's situation on social media. Did anybody catch any of that drama?
All of it.
It's really messy, because they were, and up until I thought relatively recently, doing a lot of bookings together all the time. Like, I mean, when I read what basically Arietti said initially, I was just like, when did this happen? Oh my God. And then of course, you know, all the way through to, yeah, I'm an idiot, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that.
Like, that the ChatGPT apology. Yeah.
I mean, it is more articulate than she sometimes is on social media, but clearly, and I think other people I know now have said, Arrietty has always been one of the messiest queens compared to how polished and professional Irene is, and Bosco is as well. Arrietty, on the other hand, is just a mess, just all over the place.
Well, I mean, anyway. I had heard rumblings even when in the beginning of season 17, when Arrietty got on, and people on social media were already talking about how everybody at her home bar were so glad she got on, because then she'd be touring and they wouldn't have to deal with her anymore.
I remember hearing about that. Yeah,
I think that's accurate.
Yeah,
but I love bracket one. I think that was fun. I think bracket two is meh. I'm excited to see more of Tina Burner. That's about
things
it.
Things you never thought you'd say or hear.
I like Tina.
Can we pull that?
I didn't have
an
issue with her. She's definitely a lot more polished now.
Eric, did you just
say? And I didn't realize she could sew so well.
So Pat says he likes Tina. Eric, you just said I don't have an issue with Tina. Can we just keep these handy for the future when we're all a bunch of meth heads? No.
I love Crystal. Well, I mean, Tina Burner is a former Miss Comedy queen. Like, she has ties to some of the people that we do. She's been performing, and even, you know, after her initial season, like, even, you know, the queens that we know were like, that's not her aesthetic. I don't know why she decided to jump into the ketchup and mustard Ronald McDonald of it all. But yeah. I'm glad to see her get some, you know, a little bit of validation, a little bit of redemption there.
Even though the stuff the producers gave her in her eight ball was all,
I know,
color story. Like,
these were not randomly assigned eight balls. Like, they said, here, have some red, orange, and gold.
And they looked around for Lydia's and were like, oh, here's all the leftovers from the season 17 design challenge. Here, just make another outfit out of it.
It was crazy. This is probably my weakest of the brackets. I like Lydia's fine, but we just saw her, and yeah, like, I don't.
So, who are the three that you want to move on from this bracket? I'll tell you mine. Mine are Mistress, Lydia, and Nicole, because that's who I want to see on my TV the most. Because Mistress and Nicole are both messy as all get out.
If I never see Mistress on another episode of any television series, I could die happy.
Yeah, I don't like her. I get why she's there. I get her instigation and all that. I do not like her.
Although I do think I saw her at Jackhammer in a like full body stocking on Sunday.
Well, she's lost a lot of weight. Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like one of those like big hole mesh thing, like full body things. I was like, go on, girl. And then I looked, so I was like, that looks like Mistress. I didn't ask, but then I also saw that she was at Roscoe's on Friday for the viewing party, and I was like, oh, that probably is Mistress. Mm-hmm. Listen, get your freak on, whatever. But no, I see this bracket really is hard for me. I would have moved people out of the third bracket and put them into this bracket. So I had a little bit more, like, I don't want to see Georges go on, but she will. Cause Rue would give her a fucking kidney on the stage. She would rip out her own kidney if Georges needed it. Mistress will go on because again, it's another one of those that Rue loves. And then from there, it's kind of a toss up. I don't feel like Nicole's going to go far just because she's not new age Drag Race. She's not new, the new class, the new school of Drag Race, where she's had a fantastic career. She's doing a lot, but it's not the same as what Drag Race is now. It's a different type of show than season two when she was on for two episodes.
What about Carrie Colby? I mean, she's really got a good aesthetic.
Sure.
I don't think she's like the most like not salacious, but there's not a whole lot of like novelty there. But I mean, she really looks good, and I don't know. Yeah. I like her. I want to see Tina, Carrie, and I don't know. The third one's kind of a who cares.
I mean, I was like, who else is there?
I know. I'm like, Nicole, just because. Put some old queen in there. Why not?
Yeah. If I had to choose from this bracket, it would be Tina, Carrie, and maybe Lydia.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Lydia. I guess. Let's do Lydia. Yeah. Did you all love her Little Miss Pound Cake? Her first look for this bracket was Little Miss Pound Cake. It's like, oh, yeah. I'll pull up a picture. Hold on.
Wait, her entrance or runway?
The runway, the runway.
The zebra with the pink?
Yeah. I'll pull it up. We'll move on and we'll share it.
Okay.
BJ, that's on you. that's on you to share it, BJ. BJ is our social media photo and video sharer.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I can hunt that down.
But then we get the final bracket coming up in a couple of weeks where you've got both of the Bettys, which they just wanted to fuck with us for that one. You have both of the Bettys. You get Ginger. You get
Denali.
It's Mount McKinley now. I'm just kidding. That'd be funny if, well, they recorded this a year ago, so that's not going to be a joke. But I wonder if she's using that at all in her material. It's kind of horrible.
The name change of McKinley and Denali has been going on since like 2009.
Well, but they went to Denali and now dumbass is trying to put it back. It's anyway.
Jesus. Sorry.
So the pound cake thing, what it is it's the makeup with the red, and then I think I think it's the aesthetic. It doesn't exactly look the same, but I don't know. It's people are finding it an interesting comparison.
But who else is in that last bracket?
I don't know. Ginger, the Betty.
Alyssa.
Oh, yeah.
And Cuckoo.
Oh, yeah.
So for three more episodes, you have to listen to Cuckoo.
Want to see my Cuckoo again for the second time?
No. So who out of the three in the last bracket would you want to go on?
Because she would kill me, or CJ would kill me. We'll say Ginger.
We have to say Ginger. Come on.
Who are the other two with Ginger you would like to see go on?
I mean, Ginger is good at Drag Race, obviously.
Yeah.
She's going to do well. We know that, like, and we know she's going to do well. I would kind of want to see Acid Betty do more. Like, Bob and Naomi have been talking her up so much on Sibling Watchery. With like everything that she's doing, it'll be interesting to see her back on the screen again. And then probably Diabetti out of those. I don't really care for Alyssa Hunter all that much. Like, I'm sure she's lovely. Cynthia Lee Fontaine, lovely human. I don't need to see her on my TV anymore. And who was the last one? Who else was in there? You know what? Swap out Denali for Diabetti. I'd want to see Acid, Denali, and Ginger move on from that bracket. Those would be mine.
Yeah. Mine would be Ginger, Denali, and I think I'd lean towards Diabetti over Acid Betty.
Just a Betty. Just give me a Betty, we'll be fine. Can you imagine if it's just Betty and Betty? Betty and Ginger? it'd be interesting. Who do you think is going to win the season overall?
That's a really toughie. I think it's Bosco.
I could see Bosco. So the way they're doing the final however many episodes, it's just a big lip sync battle.
No, it should be the last episode is the lip sync. It's the top nine for two more episodes with points.
Okay.
And then a lip sync for the crown.
Okay. So if there is chances for like, you know, crafty queens and whatever to get points before the lip sync, then it opens it up. But if it was just a lip sync, I'm like, well, there are certain queens that are not winning.
Snatch Game is episode 3, 6, 9, 10. Oh. So the first one, the first of the two episodes where they're competing as the top nine, is the first one is Snatch Game. I don't remember what the we have a roast coming up now in this bracket. I forget what episode 11's challenge is, but I know we get Snatch Game when we get the top nine.
That's honestly, I will say, as someone who criticizes Drag Race and like constantly, this is the most interesting innovation in terms of their whole overall bracket, all the things they've tried in years. Because I do think it gives more time to get to know the queens, just having the six at a time, but yet they're still all going to come back, and now there's even a way for the sort of non-whatever queens to come back. I really do think this has made Drag Race more interesting to me now.
But. Yeah, this is certainly a better way to do All Stars. I don't think it would work the same for a regular season.
This is definitely a
people coming.
Agreed. Yeah, yeah. I want to see. Yeah. Could you imagine them doing this with the winners, like doing another winners All Stars, and they do the bracket format again? I mean, you're going to have enough winners if you bring in all the international winners.
I want a loser season. I want a season of nothing but people who were like
pork chop season.
Like,
yeah,
lost the first challenge. Like, I want season of like the lowest of the low. That's what I want.
I mean, I was gonna say that's what All Stars is, BJ. It's just the episode of all the losers, except for when the winners come back. That's the whole point of this.
What if they did a Drag Race, whatever, I don't care what you call it, with all the like different tapes that they got submitted that they never accepted? Like, just go back through and find the most bizarre mix and match of all these queens that never made it on before, and then just go with that.
Yes.
That could be fun.
The best of the worst.
I don't even know if we have enough first outs anymore to do in first out season, because we've brought back a lot of them.
Yeah,
and I mean, some of the most notable first outs came back and did much better on their subsequent season.
Yep,
DJ, who we can't talk about, was first out on season two.
A season of all the canceled queens.
Oh no, hosted by Willow.
That just doesn't air.
Yeah, bring back any ones that were kicked off.
Being filmed, like the All Star Season 7 reunion that Bob hosted.
Yeah, oh, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't even think we definitely don't have enough queens that have been canceled. If we go across franchises.
Yeah, it's not a lot.
We've got a new one coming up from season 18.
Oh, how do we know this already?
Yeah. So she got kicked off in the second episode.
Yeah. Wait, is 18 the next one they're doing?
Yeah, it's filmed already.
Who got kicked off?
Discord Adams.
Oh. What was the reason? Like
racism.
Oh, like social media posts? Or
yeah.
Like, oh, okay.
You don't fight the Kool-Aids. That's what happens.
Perfect.
Allegedly. Sorry, I forgot to say allegedly. Allegedly. Allegedly it's Discord Adams and allegedly all this. But no, like the first episode filmed and then it came to light, and I think there was a big fight amongst the cast, and they ended up kicking contestant off of season 18. But so we have that. We have SP from season 13. We've got SN from season 4. We've got a S from season.
Did you say the winner of season 2?
No, I haven't gotten there yet. S from season 2, 3, and All Stars 3. TS from season 2. We're at like 5. But then if you go international, you've got shit, what was the one on Down Under?
Yeah, that's all I can think of, but I don't remember their name.
Like it was Scarlet something. Not Scarlet Bobo, not Scarlet.
Oh, the one that was almost canceled, and then she apologized.
And RuPaul was like, it's not my place to judge. Bitch, you're in the fucking judge's chair! You were literally at the judge's table! Judge! Judge a bitch! Right now! Yeah, that one. Scarlet yeah. something.
Scarlet Bobo? I thought that
no,
was...
No, that's Canada.
Oh, okay.
No. It's not Scarlet Envy. She might be the drama. It's
Johansson. No, it's not.
Mm-mm. Not Scarlett Johansson. Disney canceled her in their contracts, but that's about it. But no, it'd be interesting. Brian, who's your pick for winner of All-Stars 10?
I'm going to pick Bosco or Irene because I think they are just absolutely destroying everyone. But I would be very happy also if Ginger won.
Without seeing the rest of what everybody's going to do, I say our top three are Bosco, Irene, and Ginger.
What a top three. Oh my God. That would be amazing.
Yeah. I don't know who I'd want to win or who I think will win. I did watch spoilers through the brackets, but I did not watch spoilers for the top nine because I want some things to be, although I will tell you this, I've completely forgot the spoiler, like some of the spoilers for the first bracket, and watched as my heart beat out of my chest, the points going down. And I was like, I thought Aja went through, but I'm not sure now. And then she finally did. And I was like, oh, thank God. Okay. Okay. So yeah, I remember at least one person who's not making it out of this current bracket. But sometimes it's a little dicey. My memory isn't always the best, but I'm actually quite pleased with this season. What I would really like is for them to take a break for a year or two on All-Stars.
Yeah.
And then revisit a bracket system like this again, maybe a little bit longer and add a fourth bracket. We're being a little too straight here with brackets and tournaments, and pretty soon we're just going to be doing, you know, fantasy leagues with this. I know things have happened like that before, but this just lends itself to pushing for that. Next thing you know, we're going to be at fucking Ale House with it up on the TV screen, and Queen's going to get top placement. And we're like, yeah, fuck yeah. Right now, it's just gay bars. They're like, yes, bitch, why? When the queen gets the top placement.
What are you talking about? This airs at 3 in the morning. Gay bars can't reliably do.
That is a falsehood. The bars here in Chicago show it at 7 p.m. Central Time.
Yeah, I say ours do too, and I know that's just because they watch it late. But
no, but I mean, like, do it. Like, I've seen statements online from different, like, I think it was Bussy Queen or whatever that was like, put it on at a later time. The bars can't do these things. Bitch, Roscoe still be doing a viewing party. People still be buying tickets to go see the Queens talk about this shit at 7 p.m. Central. Oral is hosting the one at Meeting House.
What?
Dieter Ritz.
Oh.
Yeah. Like, so tomorrow night, I'm probably going to go over to Meeting House and watch Dieter Ritz host the Drag Race viewing party at 7 p.m. I may or may not watch the episode beforehand, but you know what? I'm still going to go. It's, you know, it's there. Anyway, Drag Race All-Star Season 10. We love it so far. We'll see how it shapes up as the season progresses. Let's talk some Marvel. You boys ready to dive into a movie about depression and loneliness and how to deal and not deal with it at the same time?
So you want to know when I saw this movie?
Uh-oh.
Jesus. It's gonna get dark.
I saw this movie the day after I had to put my dog down, thinking, I'm like, this'll get my mind off of my soul crushing loneliness. Like,
this. So you were already in the void when you watched it.
I was very much at one point I was like, oh yay, the void's in this. I can't wait to like see the void. And then I was like, I can wait to see the void because that was some fucking terrifying cinematography for Marvel. Like, legit chills every time the void was like peeking around, like with the way the lighting shifted. I was like, but yeah, I was like sitting there with my popcorn, like about a third of the way through, being like, nope, this was a mistake.
So if you don't know what we're talking about so far, This is Marvel's Thunderbolts that released in theaters. Thunderbolts asterisk that released in theaters. I forget what day it was. I didn't pull this up on my Wikipedia.
But within, May 2nd.
May 2nd. Okay, it's almost a month ago, and it follows the ragtag group of antiheroes, people who have done bad things but maybe have a good heart, or their
intentions. Honestly, I just say it's about a bunch of assholes that kind of one of them wants to do the right thing. That's kind of they're kind of just a bunch of assholes. With the except, I honestly, Yelena, it's a bunch of assholes and one person that's depressed. So
one person that's depressed. This jumped off a building. So to give you the actual like description according to Wikipedia, Thunderbolts asterisk is a 2025 American superhero film based on Marvel Comics featuring the team Thunderbolts, produced by Marvel Studios and distributed by Walt Disney Studios Motion Pictures. It is the 36th film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. The film was directed by Jake Shearer from a screenplay by Eric Pearson and Joanna Callow. Stars an ensemble cast featuring Florence Pugh, Sebastian Stan, Wyatt Russell, Olga Kurylenko. If I butcher any of these names, please don't at me in the comments. Lewis Pullman, Geraldine Viswanathan, Chris Bauer, Wendell Pierce, David Harbour, Hannah John Kamen, and Juliet Louis-Dreyfus. In the film, a group of antiheroes are caught in a deadly trap and forced to work together on a dangerous mission. So we get a bunch of bad people who need to work together and accomplish something good at the end, by the end of it. But yeah, this was not at all what I thought it was going to be. And it was, aside from BJ's situation and circumstance, it was something I guess I needed personally. Like I went and saw the movie and was like, wow, this is not the norm, which is great. Like I've been a fan of a lot of Marvel movies that people don't necessarily enjoy. Like Eternals. And this gave me a different feel and was a bit more fleshed out and fully rounded in that respect. But I thought overall it was a great movie. BJ will come back around to you on this, but Eric, what did you think of the Thunderbolts asterisk film?
I liked it. I didn't have too high or low an opinion going in on what I thought it was going to be, but it pleasantly surprised me. I understood what they were going for with it. I was kind of disappointed that the Taskmaster didn't last longer than she did, especially since how overall her character was just given the short stick. Even Black Widow. I mean, the way they handled the concept of the Taskmaster in general, I just didn't enjoy in the MCU. And then just to shoot her at the beginning of the movie was kind of eh. I liked everybody else in it. What is his character's name? Budget Captain America.
U.S. agent John Walker.
Sure. Yeah.
John Walker.
I don't really need more of him, but that shows that they're doing well with the character because I don't like him, just in general. Even his sob story, I didn't care about really.
They didn't make. They honestly didn't really try to make him likable. They gave him a little bit of a sad, like, this is kind of why he's an asshole. But like why he's an asshole is a very woe is me white man sort of way of being whammy. Like, yeah. I'm not paying attention to the things in my life. I'm reaping the repercussions of my actions. Like, I don't, he didn't have a fully understanding why he's considered an asshole. He's like, I did what I was supposed to do. Well, what you were supposed to do was be an asshole. And congratulations, you're an asshole. So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think there was really a trying to kind of explain that. I think it was, yeah, like you got that in. Granted, you had to watch Falcon and the Winter Soldier to really see his descent, but yeah, there was no real redemption in how he was at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, they didn't really redeem Ghost in any way. She was just seemed more fun, I guess. I don't know, in her banter. Because she was kind of a nothing burger from back in Ant-Man and the Wasp to then come in here. It was just like, oh, yeah, and Ghost is here.
Yeah, I don't think overall there was much redemption for the cat. Like, I don't think that was really the purpose for it. It was more just kind of a character study of bad people, or people are more than just like the actions that they are. Like, there's some reason behind it, or they might be sad too, but there was no real, like, the movie didn't go out of its way to try to sugarcoat an ending and say everybody is good now. It's just kind of like, yeah, they're still shitty people, but they've learned a little bit more. They're, you know, they're in a little bit better place.
They put them as they're more self-aware. That's the thing. John Walker, at the end of the day, John Walker is a soldier who took the super soldier serum, which I love they kind of gave the super soldier serum a caveat that it not only makes you stronger, it makes you more you. And at the end of the day, John Walker's a soldier. He has to be told what to do. He's not like if the right thing puts you on the wrong side of the superiors or whoever he listens to and like takes orders from, he's always going to take the orders. He's not gonna do what Captain America does and or Steve Rogers did and be like, no, I don't like this. I don't like how this makes me feel. I feel like this is a bad idea because it hurts people. Don't give a fuck. That's why he was essentially a hired assassin for what's her name. You know, Yelena is the only one that kind of had an emotional self-awareness. She was just kind of numb. Ghost is kind of the same. She's still herself, but she's like, by the end of the movie, she's more of like fun aunt, if anything else. Like, you still question whether or not she likes anybody in that room. And Bucky is kind of the school marm, you know, and, Red Guardian, my husband, he's a doofus. Like, that's the thing, is he was a doofus when he took their version of the super soldier serum, and he's an even more of a doofus now. Like, and he has, there's an amoral side to him, but at the end of the day, he legitimately loves Yelena, which was like, that was the shocking part to me, was like how shocking that emotional thread, how that carried through from like Black Widow all the way to now. Like, that, I'm a little emotional thread, I actually appreciated a lot. The fact that he's trying. He's an idiot, but he's really trying to, like, give Yelena something.
Yeah. I did enjoy when he and Bucky were in the front of the moving van or the van that they drove into the building to Avengers Tower with. And he was like, so which kind did you get? And he's like, and Bucky's like, I don't know, Hydra one. Like, and he was almost jealous of the fact that he got the Hydra super soldier serum. Yeah, it definitely painted some additional colors into some of these characters, but at the end of the day, it just shows that being lonely and sad is kind of a universal feeling. And it will make you, or it can lead to you just kind of feeling isolated and leading into these situations. Seeing Sentry in live action was interesting. And I think that they did a pretty decent job of putting him together. Seeing him in like full comic form was wild.
He's terrifying. Like even when he wasn't the Void, when he was, because it was like you had the Bob, the Sentry, and the Void. And when he was the Sentry, he was still fucking terrifying. And like scary differently from who's the current evil Superman? Homelander. Like Homelander is scary. But like the fact that Sentry just kind of has, like, he had this almost glazed over look of when he was fighting them, like he wasn't actually trying to like kill them. And that was the scary thing, is he was just very blasé about it, about taking them all down, and then was just kind of like, eh, whatever. And then when she started losing control of him and the Void took over, the Void was like, they did the Void perfectly. Because in the comic, the Void is drawn like almost like a monster. In this, the Void was just, it was just the absence of anything, of any real personality, any real, like, it was quite literally a physical Void personified. And that was a role where less was definitely more. So, like, that was, that, like, I was, like, when you got the glimpses where he would touch people and they would go into, I love they called it, like, oh, it's an infinite space of shame rooms. When everybody would, like, when he would touch them in some way, shape, or form, and it would show their, like, their issues or defining moment in their past.
Their trauma.
And then he would let go, and, like, yeah, their trauma.
Their trauma.
Like, the trauma. What is it? An endless amount of trauma rooms. Yeah. Endless amount of trauma rooms. That's what Leah Elena called it. She's like, oh, nice. It's an infinite space of trauma rooms. So, like, and what's great about this movie, and honestly, this movie actually paid off. I felt like this is the one movie that paid off watching Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Hawkeye. Like, this one paid off a lot of the espionage stuff that they've been kind of setting up. Mm-hmm. And where I feel Captain America 4 faltered is they didn't use any of the cool shit they set up in Falcon and the Winter Soldier that they left open-ended. They didn't use any of that in Captain America Brave New World, because they still, nobody's mentioned Carter. Nobody's mentioned Carter and her being the power broker. And I was pissed that Patriot wasn't in Captain America 4. So I was like, all these really cool themes they had set up would have made Captain America 4 such a better film. And they didn't include those set pieces that they clearly set up to be in a Sam Wilson Captain America film. Whereas in Thunderbolts, all of the set pieces, even with the Contessa, like her whole machinations, her plans, what she's actually been doing, like Yelena's emotional state and her deterioration, her crash outs, like on the way, just they did a good job. And in all honesty, with Eric, I'll say the best thing they did was fucking kill Taskmaster, because that version of Taskmaster sucked. And since they made it known that there is technology that exists in that world that can give you the same abilities of Taskmaster, now I want them to put the actual one in there. I want somebody to like find the mask and just have like a different character altogether.
Well, the, like, two lines that she had in this movie, you could already tell she had developed a personality. So I was like, oh, okay. And then, nope.
Well, maybe they could bring her back as, like, a more comic-y Taskmaster. We're getting Secret Wars. You know, we're more than likely going to have Battle World. We're going to have these things. Granted, obviously, they're not advertising her, or maybe we get a new person in the role, like, you know, BJ is saying, and, you know, we can actually get a little bit more in line with what that looks like from, or what we're used to that character looking like, rather than the weird route they went with it in Black Widow.
I'm interested to see what they end up if they end up bringing back the Taskmaster. Because the thing is, in the comics, the Taskmaster is just a mercenary that hires other mercenaries or kidnaps low-level heroes and turns them into mercenaries. That's the major thing about Taskmaster, and they could have done that with her. Clearly, they were like, "No, we're not. That's too much. We're not going to do that." And I'm like, "Fine." So I'm like, "But Taskmaster is like a mercenary that essentially runs like a mercenary business would fit so well within the narrative of kind of all the like espionage and government stuff that they've been doing." So we'll see how everything changes and shakes out post Secret Wars and Doomsday. But I was actually very pleasantly shocked that Thunderbolts was as emotional as it was. And I think it highlights when Marvel decides to do something different. I think they always succeed. So, but I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
No, for sure. I agree. It was definitely not what I was expecting, but I'm really glad that it exists, and I'm glad that I enjoyed it as much as I did. But one of the things that we haven't talked about is the asterisk, because they're not the Thunderbolts, named after Yelena's Pee Wee soccer team, sponsored by, it was like Shane's Tires or whatever. They're the new Avengers. Unless Sam's lawsuit goes through and they are not the new Avengers anymore, because Sam has put together his own group of Avengers to fill the space. Because with the blip, I don't know when any of these movies actually fall into a timeline and how all this happens. Because there was a time jump from the end of, or from Val announcing them as the new Avengers to that post-credit scene with it saying that Sam is suing them for the Avengers name. But I'm curious to see what this means for the future of Marvel, and obviously seeing the Fantastic Four ship popping into space and setting off the alerts, pretty interesting.
Which, that was the most interesting part. Well, the whole legal dispute is hilarious. I think it's funny as all get out. But I thought it was most interesting, the Fantastic Four ship coming into the universe. Because I thought that would have been... I thought with Secret Wars coming, I thought that was specifically going to pull them in that moment. But that makes me think... It makes me think that the Fantastic Four are going to lose in their movie, and they're actually running away from their world.
From the get-go, as soon as I saw the first trailer for Fantastic Four, that movie's not going to have a happy ending. That movie's going to... And the thing, and I'm okay with it, because at the core, the Fantastic... And this is what's going to be fucking hilarious. The Fantastic Four movie is essentially going to be similar to the Eternals movie, because it's a film about a family, about a famous family. At the end of the day, it's going to be about a family, and because from where it's taking place, it seems like it's taking place after they've saved the world a couple of times. Like, they're free to do whatever they want. Ben can kind of like hang out and about in the world, and not everybody's weirded out or scared of him. Like, they are very much solidified as a family. And at the end of the day, that's what the movie's going to be completely about. Now, the cool thing is, by giving them some sort of defining tragic moment and then tossing them into this universe, I'm praying we get fucking asshole Reed Richards. Like, that's what I've been wanting on screen more than anything, is Reed Richards is honestly the best character to me. When he, and not Maker Reed Richards, not the Maker, he's just insane, but Crash Out, I know better than you, like, I'm just gonna make unilateral decisions for an entire fucking planet Reed Richards, it has always been my favorite Reed Richards, because you're not really meant to like him. So I'm very interested to see how they're going to integrate them into the greater MCU, like, post-traumatic event. So, especially with, you know, a kid on the way. So I'm very interested to see how the Fantastic Four movie shakes out. But at the end of the day, I'm like, no, that's not going to end well for anybody.
Which of their kids is older?
Franklin.
Is Franklin older?
Yeah.
Franklin's older.
Okay.
Yeah, Valeria is way after.
Yeah, probably. They could do a similar storyline to where, like, because at one point I know all the Marvel heroes sacrifice themselves, all the non-mutant ones, and Franklin just drops them in a pocket dimension. So they could actually have Franklin be a linchpin for Secret Wars. So there's a lot they could do with Franklin in the mix, and Galactus kind of in the mix too. So honestly, I'm very interested to see if they pop up in another movie, because I think they did say they're going to the movies are going to be a little further apart, and I think Spider-Man Brand New Day comes out before Doomsday now. I think Doomsday is supposed to come out first, but they actually switched the roster. So yeah.
Doomsday comes out in December. They moved everything back to December for the two consecutive years.
Yeah.
So my thought, just to throw it out there to see if it actually happens, two things. One, I think there is a bigger time gap than we think in Fantastic Four, because there's been stuff that is in the movie from the Future Foundation that's included in there. So I think that there's going to be a bigger jump, and that the kids will be more involved than what the trailer is leading on. Two, I don't think anybody wins. I don't think Galactus wins. I don't think they win. I think there's an incursion, and in fleeing, they end up taking Galactus and themselves and putting them into the 616 to avoid the incursion. And then that's how they end up in here and lead towards, which, to your point, BJ, would then allow them to kind of float into some other realms before Doomsday. And potentially, if Reed does have that crash out moment, could be the impetus to Battle World being formed, or the kind of the end, the destruction of the universe from going through Doomsday before getting to Secret Wars. So I'm curious to see that. Two quick things before we wrap up. One, we're getting Jocasta in Vision Quest. They've announced the actor who's going to play Jocasta. And in a couple weeks, we get Riri back on our screens, and the launch of Ironheart finally on Disney Plus, with three episodes dropping on day one at the end of June. So episodes 1, 2, and 3, I think, are on that final Wednesday. I think that's what I think Wednesdays are the drop days. So I'm excited to see that. So we'll definitely have to talk about that. Probably won't be in time for our conversation next month, but we'll definitely have to revisit Riri Williams. And was the Hood is the antagonist in there? The Hood. So,
yeah,
lots of interesting stuff going on. I'm excited to see what we get more information about Vision Quest. White Vision's been MIA for far too long at this point. But I think with that, it's time to wrap it up. So I appreciate you boys joining for another conversation of pop culture here in the month of May as we wrap it up. We are about to turn 15 as a podcast. June of 2025 marks 15 years that this show has been dazzling your eardrums. So I know I told somebody recently that the podcast was going to turn 15, and they were like, did you have the first podcast? Did your podcast not have a name because it was just podcast? It feels that way.
That is honestly a read.
Ouch.
Is that a read?
A little bit.
That is a read.
But hey, maybe we'll have to do some fun stuff for our next episode to celebrate 15 years of doing this crazy little thing called Flame On. And but until next time, we want to hear what you have to say about the items we chatted about today. There are things that we should watch, listen to, read, be involved in. Let us know. We love to hear from you. And until next time, peace out, y'all.
Bye.